Andy, over to you.
Okay, thank you. It's great to be with you today. I'm speaking on behalf of a joint team from Europe and USA. So it's an ESA NASA actually mission study, a pair of mission studies that are coordinated. And my counterpart from ESA is Patrick Michel from CNRS, Côte d'Azur Observatory in Nice. So we're talking about an asteroid impact and deflection assessment. That's what AIDA stands for. Let's go to now slide one, which is the next slide. And it's about planetary defense. We have, this is the question of hazardous asteroids. If they hit the Earth or if they're about to hit the Earth, what would we do? And we know that very small asteroids hit the Earth all the time. And this map, in fact, is recently released data showing 20 years worth of small asteroid impacts on the Earth. And the key point to take away is that the smaller impacts happen often, the larger impacts happen less often because there are fewer of the large objects. So we had the famous impact just 2013, which that was the first slide, is a picture of that bolide, or the cloud from that bolide. Chelyabinsk caused over 1,000 injuries and a fair amount of property damage. This is a 10 or 20 year kind of impact. Every few decades, it released 500 kilotons TNT energy. Another famous impact in Siberia was at Tunguska. It was a on the order of 5 megatons TNT energy release, so it would have devastated a metropolitan area had it hit one. That is a impact, that kind of impact happens every few centuries. Okay, so the question is, we now believe these impacts happen on Earth. Even more devastating ones are more or less common, but if a hazardous asteroid is discovered and it's heading toward Earth, what would you do? And so there are various mitigation techniques that are being discussed, and I will discuss the first one on the list, which is the kinetic impactor. And that the idea is that you take a spacecraft, you run it into your asteroid, push it aside, deflect it so it does not hit the Earth. That's one of the mitigation techniques. You can also think of using a very energetic explosion, a nuclear warhead, for instance, that would either also deflect it or destroy the object. Gravity tractor is another technique I'm sure you've probably heard about, where a massive spacecraft is put near the object to try to haul it away, cause a deflection by gravity. And also there is under discussion use of directed energy, lasers, particle beams, and so on, again, to try to cause a deflection by ablating material off the surface. So slide two. AIDA is a test, a full-scale test of asteroid deflection, because the target is the secondary member of a binary asteroid. I'll explain why we're doing this in a moment. But the secondary member is a 150-meter object, which is, in other words, for comparison, the Chelyabinsk impactor is thought to be in the order of somewhere between 15 to 20 meters. So this is a lot bigger. It's big enough to devastate more than just even a metropolitan area, but a better part of an entire country if it were to hit. So AIDA is an ESA-NASA collaboration where the NASA part is called DART. It's the kinetic impactor. And the ESA part is called AIM, which is the rendezvous and impact monitoring. And that's sketched in the cartoon we show here, where the AIM spacecraft arrives first and goes, actually has a rendezvous with the Didymos binary system. And then the DART spacecraft, the NASA DART spacecraft, comes in, hits it, uses an optical imager to do the final autonomous targeting. And the idea is to change the binary orbit, which is an easier thing to do than to change the heliocentric orbit. And so you change the binary. The objective is to change the orbit of the secondary asteroid in the binary system and then learn and thereby help us. It's the first test of asteroid deflection by kinetic impact, so the idea is to learn how to do that. And across the top, we have the logos of some of the institutions that are participating and are helping us. One is the DLR, the German Space Agency. Another is CNRS, and specifically Patrick's institution, which is the COTA Zero Observatory. Okay, slide three. So as I said, AIDA is actually the sum of two, or the union of two missions. One is the asteroid impact mission, that's the ESA mission, and the other is DART, which stands for Double Asteroid Redirection Test. So DART is actually the interceptor, the deflection. And one of the features of this mission is that we wanted to structure it so that either mission makes sense, even if the other mission, for whatever reason, does not happen. So let me focus on the DART aspect. The point is that DART actually will hit the asteroid, it will cause a deflection, and then to be a meaningful demonstration of kinetic impact, it also needs to have a way to show that deflection occurred and to measure the amount of the deflection. And that's done with ground-based observations. And the reason is that's why, and that is the reason why we wanted to change the orbit of the binary orbit of a binary system, because that change can be measured by ground-based telescopes. Basically, the DART impact causes a period change of the binary. That period change can be measured because this particular binary is an eclipsing binary. So there are sharp features in the light curve. I'll talk to that a little more. But there are sharp features in the light curve, and by precisely timing when those dips in these eclipses, when these eclipses occur, timing them, you can measure the small change in the period that is caused by the DART impact, and that's the way you would confirm that you deflected the asteroid, you've changed its orbit, and actually measure the amount. In addition, the DART spacecraft carries a high-resolution imager, and the purpose of that is to determine accurately exactly where you hit, because we need to know that, and also to learn about the what we call geologic context, to learn about the nature and the structure of the surface that was hit. Of course, we do hope and expect that the other mission, the ESA AIM mission, is in fact already in the system, already characterized the target very well, measured the orbit very accurately, and will stay there after the DART impact to, again, measure the change in the orbit, more than just the period change, but measure in detail and very high accuracy what the change in the orbit is. Now, the AIM spacecraft, as summarized in this chart, has additional payloads because they also have the programmatic objective that the mission needs to make sense even if, for whatever reason, there is no DART impact. And so AIM has technology demonstration objectives as well as objectives to be the first mission to characterize a binary system, which is very likely to be. No one has ever visited one before. And so the experiments are, there's a CubeSat call, actually it just closed the announcement of opportunity on ESA's side. It just closed a few weeks ago for CubeSat experiments on AIM. AIM also, I should be clear, there was a again an ESA opportunity to provide the spacecraft. That's also closed. ESA has selected two companies to do spacecraft studies. They are OHB and Kinetic, so two European companies to study the AIM spacecraft. They're now competing. So that's going on. That's the ESA way. And, okay. And as part of that, they will carry an optical communication experiment as a technology demonstration. That's the deep space optical communication demonstration. There's the CubeSats I mentioned. And finally, there's a plan to carry the DLR mascot lander, which is the based on the mascot lander that's currently flying on the Japanese Hayabusa 2 mission. This is built by DLR. And so which is why you saw the DLR logo also earlier. Okay, so now slide four. Going on, I've said a lot of what's already on here. So AIDA is aim and dart. And our primary AIDA objective is to deflect an asteroid and measure the deflection. And secondly, to learn what are the relevant physical parameters of the target asteroid so we understand what happened, so we're able to interpret the measured deflection, and also to be able to better know how well the kinetic impactor technique works to know how much of a deflection and why. That's basically what we want to know. So we know to better learn how to do kinetic impact mitigation. So the target date is October 2022. There is a close approach, an extremely close approach to Earth by the binary asteroid Didymos. That's when the impact will occur. And we have, I have a bit of a cough. So the target date and the encounter are fixed, and let's go on. Next slide, just to comment, and I won't go through this in detail, but I emphasized so far the planetary defense aspect. It's the what would we do, how would we learn how to mitigate an asteroid. There's also the science aspect. We are, of course, very interested in studying a binary asteroid and learning about its relevant physical properties, measuring things like its density, its porosity, the strength of the target. How is it put together? Are these objects, we'll talk about how do these objects form and what are the implications of how they are assembled. I won't talk very much about it, but we believe the kind of measurements that we'll be making by an artificial impact experiment on an asteroid are entirely relevant to learning important properties relevant to future human exploration, also relevant to the ARM mission, as well as to future attempts to mine asteroids. You want to know how hard they are, how porous they are, et cetera, so how they're put together. So AIM and the AIDA mission is relevant to all of these, although it's primarily a planetary defense mission at this point. Okay. And as I already mentioned, I'm on slide six now. It's the first mission to study a binary asteroid the mascot lander will carry ground-penetrating radar. It'll carry basically the ground-penetrating radar and also the CONCERT experiment from the Rosetta mission. So both the low and high frequency radar systems, bistatic mission. It is also the first mission to actually do a test of asteroid deflection. So we're going to put in a known impact. We're going to measure how much we move the asteroid. And we're going to try to learn as much as we can about what the asteroid's, the relevant physical properties, its strength, its density, its porosity, and so on. Learn as much as we can so that we can try to better understand how to mitigate an asteroid by kinetic impact. And it has, of course, very important technology demonstration objectives. These are the AIM objectives that are shown here. Under discussion also are some experiments to be done with DART. That's still under discussion. I should actually mention before we go too much farther that these are both studies that on the ESA side, AIM is in what ESA calls phase AB1. And on the NASA side, we are now 2 weeks away from KDPA, which, the mission concept review, the MCR, which is leading into the key decision point A, after which we hope, if we are successful, we will be in NASA Phase A. Looking forward to approximately 1 year, or a little over a year from now, in Phase A. So that's where the mission is now. Okay. The target that we picked is a very interesting target. It's a binary system. I moved on to slide 7, discovered in 1996. It's an S-type near-Earth asteroid. S is the most common spectral type. We think certainly is very common, maybe the most common type in the near-Earth population. It is a binary, and we think it is one of the binaries that were spun up by this force called YORP, which is a because of the uneven solar heating of an irregular body, it can have both net forces and net torques. This is a phenomenon that is also known to spacecraft engineers. It's observed, it's actually discovered in spacecraft, and then only afterwards realized that, hey, that works. It's important for asteroids as well. I already mentioned it's the primary, the larger member of the binary system is an 800-meter object. We're not targeting that. We're targeting the secondary, which is 170-meter in this chart, maybe 150-meter on that order. The whole system is in an 11.9-hour binary orbit, and there's also a primary rotation is known. So this is a typical binary. You're showing radar data from the encounter in the previous very close approach to Earth, which is in 2003. This is Arecibo radar data and also shape model derived from the Arecibo data for the primary. And this shape is what suggests to us, and also the sizes of the two components, that they're fairly close to each other in size, and that the distance between them is not large compared to their actual size. In other words, it's a very close binary with the two components of very similar sizes. That's what suggests to us that it's a YORP spin-up system. Okay, and that's distinct from the binaries that are found typically in the main belt. They seem to have formed by completely different mechanisms. Okay, so next slide, it's unnumbered, but it's slide 8. is a cartoon showing what is meant by YORP spin-up. It is sunlight, it's uneven heating of the body, and if you have, basically what happens is that because of thermal inertia, the familiar phenomenon that if you're, you know, on the ground, and your ground is warmer, you standing on the ground are warmer in the late afternoon than you are, or in the afternoon you're warmer than you are in the morning, because, you know, you warm up in the sun, then you cool down as the sun goes overhead and starts to set, you cool down, but you stay warmer in the afternoon than you were in the morning. And that asymmetry is what gives you the, depending on the shape of the body, it gives you either net force or net torque or both. And in the case of these spin-up binaries, we think that the torque is sufficient to spin up the binary and actually cause it to either fission or to shed material off the rotational equator, which then condenses to form the binary. Anyway, that's what's meant by YORP spin-up binary. So let me move on to talk a little bit more in detail about DART. Okay, so we have our objectives falling into two classes. This is slide 9. It's marked 9 in your Acrobat file. It's actually page 10. So planetary defense, science and exploration. So for planetary defense, we want to demonstrate kinetic impact. We want to hit the asteroid. We want to measure the amount of deflection. That's done by the ground-based observations. And we want to also model that and learn how to mitigate an asteroid. That's the main objective. So, and then from relevant to science, in order to learn how to do that, we have to understand what happened. We have to be able to model it, and to do that, realistically, we need to also infer what the physical properties of the asteroid are, and some of them are listed on the right. So density, porosity, strength are the most important, and measure this factor called beta which is the momentum multiplication factor. I'll say a little more about it. But it's how much the momentum I transfer to the object actually exceeds the amount of momentum that the spacecraft brings in. And the reason is that you throw off ejecta in the backward into the direction that you came from. And because you threw off ejecta, the reaction force to that multiplies the incident momentum. And also from the ejecta, what happens to the ejecta is of interest because we think we may be able to observe it over the long term. So that's interesting, too, in its own right. Okay, in addition to being important for what happens to beta. So slide 10 now. This is the trajectory chart, which does not look remarkable at all. It's a very simple trajectory. We go out once around the Earth and then hit the guy. Basically, it's a very low-energy trajectory. The C3 is what, 6? And it never goes very far from the Earth, never goes far from 1 AU from the Sun. And essentially, you just put the spacecraft out in front of the asteroid, and the asteroid runs into it. That's how it would look from a heliocentric perspective. And the launch is for both DART. I should mention the separate launches for the NASA and the ESA spacecraft. DART launches in December 2020, and ESA Ames spacecraft launch, I believe, is within a month or two after that, so December, January 2021. Okay, so next, 11 is just a cartoon of the spacecraft. As you can imagine, it's a very simple spacecraft. It is three-axis stabilized. There's an imager on it. There's a very small amount of propulsion needed to do this, you know, a couple hundred meters per second. And there's only one instrument, which is a camera. Let me go on to say a little bit about, I'll come back to the camera. So slide 12, the spacecraft is designed to do its thing, which is to crash into the target, so the interceptor. It's just to put the camera on the target. It does optical navigation to get close, and then it has to transition to an autonomous navigation to target the center of the primary. The primary and the secondary are resolved from each other, even with a fairly large, you know, arc-second-class imager. Only, you know, a few hours to go, 3-4 hours to go, and so things have to happen fairly quickly. And we are going to turn off the autonomous targeting with 2 minutes ago in order to get science data. Quiet about that, but to get imaging. And then the resolution goal, which is meter resolution imaging, with at least 10 seconds before the impact. So that's a requirement. I consider it a requirement. The engineers call it a goal. Okay, so number 13, what is the deflection we're looking at? We're talking about a period change on the order of minutes from the DART impact. DART is a 300-kilometer spacecraft. It's hitting at, 300-kilogram spacecraft. Hitting at 6.5 kilometer per second, and that is much. That's able, depending on the impact, the angle between the incident direction to the orbital velocity direction of the target, depending on how much angle there is there. We can cause a deflection which is four times or more the required deflection. And the reason that impact, of course, matters is that we need to change the speed of the orbit. If we hit it perpendicularly to the orbit velocity, that does not change the period effectively.
Okay. Hey, Andy, this is Dan. Let me ask a quick question here. You're going to be looking for the period change of the moon around the asteroid. Are you going to be measuring the rotation rate of the asteroid of the moon as well? The reason I ask is that if you don't hit the center, if you hit a little off to the side, some of your energy is going to be used putting that moon into rotation. So,
yes, that is correct, and that's something we're looking into. Now, the rotation of the secondary is current. It's enough smaller that it's not detected at the moment. the it's thought to be a synchronous system with the secondary tidally locked to the primary. The rotation of the primary is seen. It has a different period. And, in fact, the detection of the two periods in the system is basically how it was discovered to be a binary in the first place. So there is a rotation of the primary, which we're not changing. That observationally has to be taken out. And after you take that out, then you see the periodicity associated with the binary orbit. And I was going to get to this. This is coming up if you look ahead in the slides. Then you have to get to that. And, yes, realistically, we don't know where the center of mass of the secondary is. And even if we knew where it was, we couldn't hit it exactly. And so you will couple some of your incident momentum into rotation. That is a very interesting prospect as well. I doubt that will be observable from the ground. In fact, I'm fairly confident it will not be. But the Ames spacecraft there will be able to observe that.
Right. That's a good point. Okay, thank you.
Okay. And I should mention Dan Mazanek, who is on the phone, is actually also one of the people who is part of our team. Okay, so slide 14 is just a simple chart to talk about the momentum enhancement. It's actually very important that the amount of momentum you transfer, we think, is going to be bigger than the amount of momentum you bring in. That's very important for the mitigation aspect. This multiplication factor, exactly what it is very dependent on the nature of the target material, which we don't know very well. It could be quite large. Quite large meaning there's in the literature a statement that if it's a very low strength, low porosity material, beta could even be 100. But more likely, you know, if it's solid rock, you're talking about numbers like 4. Beta or 5 for beta. If it's a porous, soft material, which we think, a low-strength porous material, which most people believe is the most likely, then beta is somewhere between 1 and 2. So in other words, it's a small enhancement. It's enough that we should worry about it if we want to precisely deflect the asteroid by a certain amount, but it's not. All right. It's not a huge factor, but it is very important, and it's one of the, and trying to determine what that is and understand what it is already. Just the measurement that says, okay, if beta is as large as 3, we could be fairly sure that this is a hard target. It's actually a competent rock target, for instance. Okay, so slide 14. I've already said a lot of these things. This is a picture of some of the predictions for beta that are in the literature. So the chart shows beta minus 1 and the dots and the symbols. Those are mostly experimental results on laboratory scales. These are small things, and then the issue of how you scale from a lab experiment up to a full asteroid, there's lots of issues which I probably can't get into today without running out of time, versus the velocity. But there are many predictions, and as I said, beta may be close to 1, or beta may be a lot bigger than 1, depending on the type of target. Okay, so let's go to slide 16. The camera we're talking about is based on the New Horizons LORI camera. And, in fact, we're talking about flying flight spare optics metering structure from New Horizons. I'm actually running out of time. So let me move on to slide 17. I mentioned the complication of looking at the mutual events in Didymos. These are actually what you're looking for is the eclipses, either the eclipse of one body by the other as seen by the Earth, and that causes a sudden change in brightness, or you have eclipse of the sun, in other words, one body casting a shadow on the other body, again causing a sudden drop in brightness. Those are called mutual events, and you see them after you remove the effect of the body rotation from your light curve. So we're talking light curve observations, and it's with these measurements that we would hope to be able to measure the change in the binary orbit period caused by the dark impact. Okay, so slide 18, another interesting aspect is that the size of the dark impact we're talking about is similar, and the amount of material you release is of the same order as what is thought to be are happening in these active asteroids, an example of which is shown on slide 18, the Hubble data, main belt object, this famous active asteroid, P2010A12, which is observed, you know, AU from Earth, will be much closer to the Dynamo system, but there is at least the prospect that enough material will be released that we would create an object that would be, that the ejected tail would be observable from Earth for, you know, many weeks after the encounter. It could be a truly spectacular event. Another event which is probably less exciting, but which actually I think scientifically may be equally important, is that some of the DART ejecta is going to actually be captured into a transient disk in the Dynamo system. That also may have an observable effect on the light curve, and that would be very interesting. And, of course, it will be observable by AIM. Studying that, I think, is also going to be of tremendous interest for astrophysics even, let alone asteroids.
Andy, quick question on this. The light curves and so forth, is this under the assumption that the AIM spacecraft is not available? Because it seems to me that it's all fairly redundant if you have the AIM spacecraft at the site to examine really close all the ejecta.
Yes, you're right. I'm talking both. So both possibilities. We certainly hope that the AIM spacecraft will be there and will be observing all of this, measuring it carefully. Yes, we certainly hope that will be the case. And there have been many of the cubes I probably shouldn't talk about, but yes, there was a CubeSat call, and of course there are lots of ideas for trying to measure and observe the system. So AIM would do that, and in addition, there will be a ground-based observing campaign that's part of the NASA part. So NASA, as part of the DART mission, is going to support a ground-based astronomical observing campaign, both optical and radar. I should mention the radar, the Dynamo's 2022 encounter with Earth is also an excellent Arecibo radar target. Okay, so let me say a little bit about AIM. I'm running out of time, so we're going to AIM now, slide 19, and it is a technology demonstration. It is also an asteroid impact mitigation test, and it's a science mission studying a binary. And let's go to slide 20. So initially, there is the rendezvous with the system, that's P1. Then there's an early characterization of the system from a large distance, 35 kilometers away. You're imaging the surface, and you're running your optical communication experiment. Then you're moving closer. AIM will carry a thermal infrared imager to measure thermal inertias and to map temperatures across the body. And also, this is when they will carry out the high-frequency radar sounding, a MARSIS-type experiment, of the surface and shallow subsurface. This is from AIM with their HF radar. Then in P4, they deploy the Mascot 2 lander, which is basically a new version of the Mascot lander on Hayabusa 2, the Japanese mission Hayabusa 2, which is going to Okay, now the DART impact occurs at P5, and while that happens, of course, AIM spacecraft is going to have to back off to a safe distance. It doesn't want to be nearby. That's not safe. So it has to back off. DART hits it. Then you come back in, and you do a second detailed characterization after the DART impact with the high-frequency radar. Also, we think Mascot is on the surface. We are discussing whether that is safe to have Mascot on the surface. The problem being that the DART impact is such that the seismic shock transmitted, which may be transmitted globally on the secondary, may be sufficient to throw Mascot off the surface. So we're thinking about that. But in this plan, Mascot is on the surface when DART hits. And so then after that, we'll do both the high-frequency, low-frequency radar with a bistatic measurement now. And in addition, course, AIM will study the crater that DART made. So measuring its size, its depth, and so on is very important, again, to help characterize and understand the amount of the deflection.
Andy, how about dropping the lander in the crater?
That is would be lovely, but I don't believe that. Okay, the crater is maybe 10 meters across. I don't believe we can drop it that accurately, but again, that's something to be studied. That would be lovely if we could do it. I don't know that they could do it that accurately. This is ESA has a lot of experience having just, you know, tried to drop a fillet on Rosetta. They're, needless to say, very, very anxious about this. But yes, it would be very nice to be able to put Mascot actually in the crater. Mascot, I think, does not have mobility, so where it goes, and it won't be able to move around. Okay, so 21. There are, of course, part of AIM, the number of, again, also part of DART, is there are several numerical simulation efforts. Again, this is how we're going to learn how to mitigate, because we have to model as well as we can the outcome of the DART impact. And that's how we will get the understanding to be able to learn how to mitigate biokinetic impact. So modeling aspects, and this is a particular paper by Jutsi and Michelle, published in 2014. Excuse me. Okay, so AIM on slide 22 is to measure mass, internal properties. It is also to try to understand that, well, to confirm, Patrick would love to be able to confirm that this object is, in fact, a York spin-up binary, to understand what the response of the surface is, and to be able to model better the effect of a spacecraft impact on an asteroid. So that's all. So characterizing the body, that's slide 22, slide 23. Okay, well, this chart, okay, this chart is a duplicate. Let's skip it, slide 24. Measuring the mass, the shape, binary, or characterizing the orbit, discriminating between bare rock and regolith surfaces, and measuring the properties, porosity, density, and strength. That's slide 24. Slide 25, looking at with the radar, with the ground penetrating radar, to look for subsurface structure, layering if it's there, trying to understand whether it is a rubble pile or whether it is actually a solid rock, and hopefully say something about whether how the moon was assembled. Addressing the question of how the binary system formed. That's slide 25. Slide 26, I'm actually getting close to the end here. Let's go back and try to put the two pieces of AIDA back together, AIM and DART. And I'm showing on the left side AIM objectives, and on the right side DART objectives. So DART, as I mentioned before, it's about demonstrating that there was an asteroid deflection, measuring the deflection, understanding why it was deflected the way it was, and to modeling it and validating the models. And of course, we need AIM, working with AIM to do that, and as well studying the long-term dynamics of the impact ejecta, so a disk if there is one, a dust tail if there is one. We need to study that as well. Again, that's with AIM. And then AIM is about characterizing and determining the important physical properties to enable us to model the impact as well as we can. Also, to study the dynamical state, both the rotation and the binary orbit, so to measure the deflection as accurately as possible, to understand the geophysical properties, geotechnical properties, I should say, really. So things like the strength, you know, shear strength, compressive strength, if we can measure them, if we could separate them, that'd be great. We will, in fact, by deploying the Mascot lander, dropping it on the surface, that also gives an additional inference on surface properties under very different conditions from the impact, But again, people are wondering, yeah, will it bounce off again the way that the Philae lander bounced off the comet and so on. So looking at its surface properties and also measuring subsurface properties, the technology demonstrations I've already mentioned, the optical comm, the CubeSats, and the lander, deploying the lander, and then with the DART mission, of course, measuring what the momentum transfer actually were. So AIM is what actually measures momentum transfer and studies, for instance, if there was any change in the rotation state of the secondary and so on. DART, by measuring the period, is really only measuring the orbital energy. It's not quite the same thing. They're closely related, but it's a little bit indirect. And then with AIM, of course, actually measuring the shallow subsurface structures, see if there's any changes, and it's studying the crater. Okay, so that's slide 26, 27. This is my summary slide. So AIDA is about planetary defense. It's about science and exploration. It's about showing that we can do it. We can actually use the kinetic impact to deflect an asteroid and then to understand what happened by measuring the amount of the deflection from a known kinetic impact. We're going to improve our ability to predict what will happen when we try to deflect an asteroid by a kinetic impact. Those of you who know that actually hypervelocity impacts and explosions are very closely related. So the effect of an explosion in many ways is very similar to the effect of a hypervelocity impact. That's once you've coupled all the energy into effectively a pressure wave into the system. So relating it to the effect of a nuclear blast is trickier because of the effect of neutrons. But anyway, still, there's the kinetic impact experiment also tells us about any instantaneous energy momentum release in an asteroid. Okay, so understanding collisions, inferring physical properties, testing your models of binary formation, all these things, and we're relevant to science and exploration as well. So I guess I am done, and if there are any other questions or comments, I'm happy to hear them.
Thank you very much, Andy. That was great, and we do have plenty of time for questions. I'm going to start out asking you one. I'm wondering how you map this experiment onto real planetary defense. That is, when you got a 300-kilogram dart hitting this moon at 6 kilometers per second. The two asteroids are still moving along the same path almost exactly right. That is, if Didymos was going to hit the Earth, DART hitting this would not prevent it from hitting the Earth. So how do you extrapolate this? I mean, you need a really big mass going really fast to hit the asteroid. What are you picturing for, suppose, Let's suppose it's a 100-meter asteroid that's headed our way. What do you do about it?
Okay, 100-meter asteroid, a DART impact is going to change its speed by the order of a millimeter per second.
Right.
That actually is enough to cause it to miss the Earth as long as you do it a year or two in advance. So for a 100-meter asteroid, something like this is actually about right. If you had a bigger object, if you were at, for instance, the Planetary Defense Conference a few weeks ago, they had a bigger target, okay? And there, something like DART would not have been big enough, but, if you had 10 or, several impacts, or including, larger ones where you use a larger launch vehicle to toss a bigger object at the asteroid, then, yeah, you could deflect it enough, in principle, for a few hundred-meter guy. Now, an object that is as large as a kilometer across, okay, now you're talking about rather rare impacts. You're talking now million-year kind of impacts. K kilometer across, yes, kinetic impact is just not going to do it for you. We can't throw anything big enough. Yeah, but if we could put the biggest nuclear warheads or a bunch of them, then you're talking maybe you could do something about it. But those are million-year impacts. The if you try to estimate the hazard, taking into account how much damage an impact of a certain size would do and how often we expect such impacts to happen, then it turns out the biggest part of the threat is actually at the small end. So it is your 50, 100-meter, 150, 200-meter object. That's where most of the actual threat is. And so in that sense, small spacecraft, you know, a dart-sized spacecraft hitting at normal, you know, 5, 10 kilometers per second, that is the right, that is actually relevant to the question of what you would actually do. That's something you could actually do.
Okay, that's actually really interesting because, you know, I was thinking of it purely in terms of a transverse velocity. You know,
right.
If you were having this go a millimeter per second transverse to the Earth, you know, a millimeter per second times a year is, you know, a few tens of kilometers. And, you know, that's a matter of you know, the asteroid not hitting Brooklyn, but hitting the Bronx instead.
Yeah, but that is the right calculation. What you're doing is you accumulate that velocity change over a year or two, but you're moving it actually in – you're changing the – you're moving in a long track direction primarily.
Right. So basically you're either slowing it down or speeding it up so the Earth is not there when it gets – that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Yeah, so that's actually what's going on. I think the math is wrong. So you're talking a few years that, you know, say 10 to the 8 seconds times a few millimeter times a millimeter per second. Hopefully 10 to the 8 seconds times that is in the order of the size of the Earth. But
okay, yeah, I should look at that again. But okay, other questions for Andy?
Quick question for Andy. This is a great mission. I'm really hoping that it gets fully funded all the way through. Andy, what's your gut feel in how the relevant NASA or ESA are taking this mission? Do you feel it's really high interest or low interest?
Well, I think we have a realistic shot at actually getting funded all the way through. We do have at NASA, Lindley Johnson is a supporter. Of course, he's funding us now in the Near Earth Object Program, funding the study now. The big gate, actually, the most difficult gate to get through is into Phase B, and that it will be the second half of 2016, I expect. So we think we have support from Planetary and SMD and on up. We know on the European side, DLR, of course, is a great supporter, and ESA is currently funding the study, again, out of its, General Studies Program, I think is what it is. Right now it's part of the technology side of the house. It's not in the science program again.
Second thing is the secondary. If you come across the secondary, it's sort of like a rubber duck shape.
Yes.
You have the possibility of fracturing the secondary. How high a priority, or would that be a plus for science or a minus for science to have the secondary fracture?
I think it's a plus for science. It would be fascinating to study that. I think it would be – if you're actually trying to mitigate the guy, that would be awful because most likely you would just split the guy in half. You would deflect half of it, and the other half would continue the way it was or something like that. And so that that would be very bad if you're mitigating.
Got it. The second question on the science returns, there's been a real constraint on data throughput because of high deep space network unavailability. Is the laser testing going to be used for the data transmittal of high-resolution images and high-resolution data from AIM? Is that part of the plan?
I actually don't know. I don't believe it's been thought through yet. That would be a great thing to try. Obviously there would be huge risk associated with you know, relying on that for the data treatment.
Right.
But
and then you mentioned
bypass. Try something like that, yeah.
Okay, and then also you mentioned biostatic radar for determination of tomography of the secondary. Is the MASCOT 2 lander part of that biostatic, or is that going to be a biostatic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's the concert-like experiment. If you're familiar with Rosetta.
Correct. Now, would it be possible for the, I know the lander is not configured right now, but there's a little bit of time left before it has to be used. Couldn't the lander do two landings? For example, it could land once to do the initial assessment of the tomography of the secondary before impact, and if necessary, land a second time because of the shock to do a secondary tomography after impact of the secondary satellite.
I would love to. That's what they like. What they would like is that they would like to be deployed before the impact and then stay there to do exactly that. That's what they want to do. So they're trying to convince themselves that it's safe to be on the surface somewhere when DART hits.
Wouldn't it be just better just to be able to land a second time? Wouldn't that be more?
They're not planning to carry any propulsion.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they can't jump at all, so they're just going to be dropped on the surface and do their thing.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions for Andy?
No,
maybe not.
Maybe not.
Well, Andy, that was really good. That's really interesting. I only knew a little about did you pronounce it AIDA? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, actually, the name is from our Spanish, European colleagues,
right.
And so they were thinking of the opera, AIDA.
Okay, that's nice. That's nice.
Yes.
Okay, well, this is really excellent, and like I said, these things go, the presentations and the audio go in our archives and are downloaded hundreds of times over just the course of a couple of weeks, so really, really reach a lot of people. But thank you again, and I want to remind everybody that we will be having another FISA Telecon next week, which will be interesting, so we'll hope to see you all there then. So thanks very much again, and goodbye.
Goodbye.